Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Sri Lanka's Women's World Cup campaign is over, but it was glorious while it lasted. Welcome to Sri Lanka 99.94. My name is Mark Machado from the Mirrorly End, and I'm joined as always by Estelle Varzadeva from the Papere. Estelle is rightfully irked off at me because it took me ages to get my laptop working, but I'm here now, we're here now, and we're going to chat through, review Sri Lanka's World Cup campaign. Estelle, we kind of went into it with quite low expectations. They hit the ground running in the first game and they beat South Africa quite convincingly. Then they kind of got through Bangladesh, and then when they came up against Australia and New Zealand, the kind of wheels started to come off a little bit, and that kind of uncompetitiveness, particularly with the batting, really kind of came through. How are you feeling the kind of morning after that last game against New Zealand?
Yeah, I think, we spoke about this in the previous episode as well. It was important to manage our expectations, because the win against South Africa is very much a surprise. And I will say that in terms of, you know, pulling that off, it had a lot to do with things outside the game as well, I feel. Like, maybe South Africa will admit it or not, whether they admit it or not. Possibly the exclusion of their captain has played a massive part psychologically in the side. Men or women, they've had trouble in pressure situations. You know, the choker's tag has stuck over the last, I don't know how many years. So that first game was always going to be a pressure, more pressure. There was always going to be more pressure on them than Sri Lanka. And I think Sri Lanka capitalized there. But after those two first games, you always kind of had to kind of temper your expectations, because Sri Lanka hasn't beaten either one of those teams, Australia or New Zealand, in any format, right? Of course, I think we've played New Zealand, and this itself is kind of unimaginable. 19 times since 1997 in ODIs and T20s, which is, I mean, is very hard to believe. Anyway, we hadn't beaten them. So, to be honest, I was going into it with, look, a win would be incredible, and, you know, I don't know what it would lead to, but a loss is not—it's not something to kind of panic about either, because, like I said, you know, the kind of gap between the sides is so big.
Yeah, 2 years ago, me and you first started talking about the fact that the women's team doesn't exist. It feels like we've come a heck of a long way since then, right? I think the New Zealand loss was really that the only game where I kind of felt, at least, you know, I don't want to say the girls didn't give it their all, but they didn't, you know, they didn't put in the performance I thought they've got in them. I thought getting all out for 60 was quite cheap. And, you know, I think they probably, you know, they would have come away thinking they gave them way too many runs in the end. Their bowling performance wasn't as good as it could have been. But even against Australia, I thought, actually, you know, the girls put in a really good performance. 2 years ago, the women's cricket team didn't exist in Sri Lanka, where Australia, even 2 years ago, was still probably the most professional team in the world in terms of resources and in terms of, you know, the amount of how good their setup was and the amount of quality players that they have available. And I think that ultimately is what was the undoing of this side and why they weren't able to progress to the semi-final. I think, you know, if we finish fourth in the group, I think we'll finish now. I actually think in many ways that's a huge success, because even, you know, at the risk of opening up a rivalry or digging into an old wound, I think, like, even Bangladesh is, their women's setup is much further ahead than ours is, right? The big, you know, instantly, is essentially after that South Africa win, SLC announced that they're going to up the match fees. And I thought that's so important, right? I didn't realize the match fees were so low. And, you know, tripling it overnight, I think, is such a big step. We know that there's more women's cricket franchise tournaments and more opportunities coming. And we've got to just try and work to get our girls into those tournaments, right? Because that's how they're going to improve and that's going to close that gap. But I think, you know, it needs to be a longer term, 5 to 10 year project in terms of trying to get the Sri Lankan women's team to be as competitive as the men's side are, right? Should we talk about the batting? Because kind of going into the tournament, the thing that me and you were both worried about was the batting, right? We knew we'd seen them at the Asia Cup and playing in other games that they're pretty good at defending totals. It's can they put runs on the board? I think if you, apart from that New Zealand game, I actually think the batting showed a lot of improvement over the course of the tournament.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think there's been this dependency on Athapattu for so long, and we've spoken about it at length in previous episodes as well. But in this tournament, we saw a couple of others who are kind of stepping up. I think a lot of it has to do with the fact that Sri Lanka played, 21 T20s last year, which is massive when you compare it with 2021, where they played zero, right? And I mean, looking at just what you were talking about in terms of structure, stuff like that, for an Australia, India, 21 T20s a year is I think about par, but for Sri Lanka it's not. So I think a lot of the improvement we have seen is thanks to that. I will say that I don't know how much credit SLC can take for that, because the Asia Cup, obviously, and the Commonwealth Games were part of made up a big part of those 21 games, right? But the structures, like you said, there has been improvement, and credit where credit's due. There's been a push, even the increase of match fees. I think the decision was made, or so it was communicated by SLC, that the decision was made before the tournament. So end of January, they decided that they would up the match fees. So it wasn't kind of an overnight decision where they saw Sri Lanka succeeding and increased it. So that's good. Obviously, they've invested in a training facility at Tamil Union, where they've, I think, got the nets and a few facilities there for a contract of 10 years, which is great. But at the same time, there also needs to be, like, if you want to be competing now, like you said, there needs to be that 5 to 10 year plan of, you know, how we're going to progress. And I think that progress doesn't happen if the school system is not fixed, if the club system is not fixed. There has to be a better system in place. There have to be more schools playing so that they are producing better players that come into club cricket, and there have to be private clubs. If Sri Lanka is going to go forward, they can't depend on the three or four forces to provide the teams, because I've said this multiple times on this podcast and many other kind of ones that I've been a guest on. It's what happens is everyone who's showing promise at schools level is recruited by one of the forces teams, and then sometimes they don't even get to play in the first team, right? They're in the second team or maybe even in the third team. So that doesn't help the system. So we have to have, I wish teams like clubs like SSC, NCC would kind of invest in the women's game. We're seeing that there is value in it, right? So now is the time, I think, that they have to capitalize on that. There's no return without investment. I think that's the main thing that many of the stakeholders in Sri Lanka cricket who are looking at women's cricket need to understand, is that if you don't invest, you're not going to see returns. Maybe you'll have the odd game like Sri Lanka beating South Africa. You'll have the odd success, but like if you look around the world, sustained success is only coming from teams that have countries where they have invested massively in their women's programs.
Let's take a quick break. When I come back, I want to talk about central contracts because I think that might be in the kind of medium term the way forward here.
I'm Jared Kimber and I host two podcasts on 99.94. Red Inca, which is chats on trends and stories within the game with a weekly Q&A where I can be asked about anything from a time-traveling Don Bradman to which cricket ground serves the best food. And Double Century, a look at the historical stories that make cricket what it is today. You can search for either of them in your favourite podcast platform or on the 99.94 DM app.
So Estelle, you talk passionately there about having, you know, seeing a structure put in place by SLC, seeing, you know, more clubs embrace women's cricket. We've talked loads on this podcast over the weeks and months about how we'd like to see more schools, more girls' schools embrace red ball cricket. I discovered during the course of the tournament that the only women's player on a central contract is Charmery. She obviously is quite head and shoulders above everyone else in terms of her cricketing ability. Is it time for SLC to consider giving more of the girls central contracts? Do you know if that's something that's on the cards? Is that, you know, do they need to look into doing that? And if so, who is it, do you think, it needs to be in line for those contracts so that they can kind of move up a level, as it were?
Yeah, I mean, you say that, like when you say that Charmery Athapattu is far ahead of everyone else in terms of ability, right? Like, I don't necessarily agree with it. Obviously, she's a special talent. But at the same time, with the kind of opportunities that she's gotten, like, you know, having a central contract and that gives her that freedom to kind of train as a professional, right? Which is not necessarily afforded to the other players. They do have contracts as far as I know, but she's the only one who's kind of getting like a substantial, you know, financial incentive for playing for Sri Lanka. So I think I mentioned this in the previous episode as well. More than match fees, I would be interested to see how they go about the contracts because I feel that that is more important. Match fees are, you know, when you play, Sri Lanka don't play that much. So it's a lot of the other things around that that matter. Sometimes, and I mean, tripling it is fantastic. It's a great, it's a good step. It's a step in the right direction. But the contracts are, I think, even more important because they would, like I mentioned that in the previous episode, they would give the opportunity to the players to kind of, you know, focus completely on playing cricket, which ultimately is going to help, right? But at the same time, again, it's the lower levels that need a lot of investment because that's where you're getting the players. If you look at the Sri Lankan team, a lot of these players, a lot of them have been playing for the last 10 years, right? And some players, even if there is below par performance at the international stage, there's nobody to replace them. Like, I know some of these players, like, I mean, Oshadi Ranasinghe, Anushka Sanjeevani, are prolific at domestic level, right? But when they come to international cricket, they haven't necessarily lived up to that. So they need to find ways to address those things. I think The landscape is changing, but it's changing slowly. So that only means that the gap between those the main sides, the bigger sides and us is widening and widening. Central contracts, better pay would be fantastic, but also a lot of investment in kind of the grassroots and the schools and club structure.
It's interesting, right? Because you mentioned that players stay in the team for 10 plus years. There's players on that side who are going to play for SL for 20 years, right? Charmery is played in every... I think she's played in every edition of the World Cup. I think there's other players there as well. She's, what, in her mid-30s? She's probably got two or three more World Cups left in there. It's kind of up to her to decide. You look at Vishmi, she's 17. She could easily, you know, obviously... you know, she might decide she doesn't want to at some point, and that's absolutely fine. Or, you know, injuries obviously happen as well. But I can envision a situation where these girls are staying in the team for 20 years, right? So they've got to invest in them. They've got to try and build a system around it. I think, in, you know, I'll be honest, I didn't know a huge amount about the structure of women's cricket in SL before I started talking to you about it. It feels, you know, we've got the passion among Sri Lankans for the sport, regardless of what gender they are. And it, you know, SLC are quite, you know, they talk about how successful they are and how much money they've got. They say they're richer than the New Zealand cricket board. Well, it's time to, you know, show us the money and put that investment in, right? And of all the people who are in, you know, that they'll be, we know what Sri Lankan cricket fans are like, right? There'll be people going, oh, don't watch the women's cricket. They're not going to win anything. They'll disappoint you. Like, don't let yourself get hurt by them, kind of thing. The people who should be hurt by it are SLC, because actually they're the people who've, in a way, kind of let women's cricket down over the years. There is a lot of women's cricket to come, though, right? Because, you know, we know at some point we're expecting this T10 tournament. As far as I'm aware, that's still going ahead. I'm looking forward to the girls coming over to the UK to play some fixtures against England at the end of the English summer. So they'll be here in September. And there's other fixtures planned for them, right? So they don't totally, you know, because part of the problem's been in the past, we talked about how they played no fixtures during COVID and just kind of afterwards. Part of the problem is they just seem to disappear. But that seems to be kind of sorting itself out a little bit. And I think, you know, in terms of the future, I think that there is a future for them. And I think it's up to SLC to kind of put those structures in place that we've discussed at length. And I'm sure, Estelle, you're available to consult for them if they need you to come in and create various domestic structures and try and go and talk to these clubs to get them to embrace it. We've seen how much money is involved in women's cricket now with the creation of the WPL. And we've also, you know, me and you have talked extensively both on pod and via WhatsApp about how gutted we were that none of our girls made it into the WPL. And I think in the kind of short to medium term, one of the objectives has got to be to try and get 3-4 players into that tournament as soon as possible, right?
Yeah, and that only happens if they have regular cricket, right? Like you said, so we're expecting Bangladesh to come over, I think, in a month or so. They were supposed to come before the World Cup, which would have been, I think, ideal for Sri Lanka in terms of preparation, but it wasn't to be. They're coming, I believe, in late March or April. And then New Zealand are also scheduled to come this year to Sri Lanka. The dates aren't finalized yet. And we're traveling to England. So that will be massive. But then that has to be kind of a sustained thing. Obviously, the women's FTP was released for the first time this year, or this cycle, which is great. I think it gives a lot of opportunities. And also, I think maybe Sri Lanka cricket also in some ways need to approach it like how men's cricket was played in the 90s and the early 2000s, where you had like multi-team tournaments, the triangulars, the quadrangulars, because I feel like that does help because you're playing multiple teams and you're not kind of, if you're playing a bilateral, you're playing 3 ODIs, 3 T20s, right? But if you have kind of that quadrangular, you may be getting a few more games. The only thing is financially, to be honest, like, you know, drawing crowds is going to be tough in Sri Lanka. I mean, even if you look at men's games, unless it's like a big team, there aren't that many people who are coming into grounds, or they're not filling the stadiums at least. So that's a challenge for SLC as well. I feel like there are a few things that could be done. It's not going to be easy, but like I said, like, you can't get returns if you don't invest. Maybe there will come a time like we are seeing with the men's team where you have multiple players who are playing in overseas franchises. That'll be kind of the ideal situation for Sri Lanka.
Should we take a quick break? When we come back, should we talk about the bowling? Because we haven't mentioned that at all.
Hi, I'm Nikesh Raghani, commentator and host of the India on 99.94 podcast. Several times each week, my co-host Sara Waris and I we'll be bringing you the very best in Indian cricket chat, whether we're discussing the legend of Julan Goswami, KL Rahul's strike rate, the men's T20 death bowling woes, or the latest controversy involving the BCCI, we've got you covered. You can listen and subscribe via your usual podcast provider. Just search for India on 99.94. You can watch us via YouTube and you can download the 99.94 app. If you love Indian cricket, then join our conversation.
So Estelle, we're discussing, we're reviewing Sri Lanka at the World Cup. They definitely exceeded my expectations, and I think I can say they kind of exceeded yours. We finished fourth. We knew coming into the tournament that bowling was definitely our strongest side to the game than batting. There's two aspects that we need to discuss. That's how our bowling was generally, and also shouldn't we be expecting our players to be doing a little bit more when they're fielding to back up our bowlers? Because sometimes, you know, in cricket, you can create pressure situations with your fielding. And in fact, if you go into a major tournament and you're expecting your team to do better and to get through to past the group stages, then the fielding's just got to be better than what we've seen from SL the last few days, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I was going to say, and Mel Jones spoke about this in the very first game of the tournament when Sri Lanka going into those kind of last four overs against South Africa, where the game was very much in Sri Lanka's favour. And then suddenly you have someone misjudging a catch on the boundary, couple of runouts missed, misfields. And this has been a consistent pattern for Sri Lanka over the, past couple of years. For as long as I've been watching or covering the game, this has been a persistent issue, right? And I think this is one aspect that makes the campaign disappointing, to me at least. The win against South Africa is fantastic. Finishing fourth, I think we would have expected them finishing fourth. But, you know, when you look at the overall picture, if you're a batter, we can always say, you know, they're coming up against very experienced bowlers, some who are much quicker than what they're used to, conditions, et cetera, right? Bowling, similarly, if you're bowling to Lisa Healy and Beth Mooney, you kind of give them that leeway that, you know, they're world-class batters. They've taken apart every bowling attack in the world, right? But the fielding is the only thing kind of in your control, right? The fielding and the running between the wickets, which is another whole area I think they've improved.
Hold on, Estelle. Running between the wickets badly is a hallmark of Sri Lankan cricket. And to my dying day, I want to see it. If we start getting that right, then, like, who knows?
There's no point how watching anymore.
There's no point watching it. Like, that's the drama of it. Yeah.
Yeah. So the fielding, like, that's the only thing you can control, right? Like, to a degree at least. And we saw it in the first game. We saw it yesterday. And people are going to come back and say, in fact, my dad said, while we were watching it, you know, what is this? They conceded 160 on a pitch that's not like, it wasn't an easy pitch to bat on, right? But what if that run out was made when, I think, one of the New Zealand openers was on 9? I'm sorry, I said one of the openers because I can't say her name. The wicketkeeper bat from New Zealand. I'm sorry, I don't want to mess it up, so I'm not going to say it.
She
was dropped on 17. Either. Yeah. So
yeah.
We should get someone from New Zealand to tell us how to say it. Anyway, if those two opportunities were taken within the first five overs, then all the pressure's back on New Zealand, right? Because New Zealand were aware that they needed to get a big score and win this game with a big margin to have any chance of going through. So, those are the things that have plagued Sri Lanka. The fielding has plagued Sri Lanka for so long that now it's not even, sometimes I feel the bowler is not even surprised. She's not even saying anything because it's almost like a ball goes up in the air. There is a 70% chance it's not going to be taken, right? And Attapattu, I felt, did well yesterday not to explode because it's just incredibly frustrating. I can imagine how frustrating it is for the skipper and the bowlers when, you know, regulation catches go down and misfields happen. Because, you know, like I said, that's one thing you can control. And they train very hard. the way I see it, it's 1,000% pressure, in the sense that handling pressure is the biggest issue, whether it's the bat, the ball, or in the field. Maybe they need mental conditioning, coaching, something like that, if they don't already get that. Because Athapattu mentioned it in her post-match press conference as well, that a lot of youngsters take pressure onto their shoulders. It's easier said than done. Like, of course you feel the pressure when for the first time in Sri Lanka's history you have the opportunity to move to the semifinals. But yeah, I mean, that's the most frustrating part about watching Sri Lanka is the feeling. I have no problem if they lose to New Zealand, bowled out for 60. It's fine if we've taken all our opportunities and, you know, done the best that we can.
I think, in conclusion to the tournament, it seems to me that a lot of the problems that we talk about the women's side, about low strike rate, about not really being able to build an innings, and poor fielding, and running between the wickets, and a lack of a lack of structure, seem to be the same problems we talk about when we review the men that go into major tournaments as well, right? You know, one of the recurring themes of this podcast has been, I think they need a psychologist to work with them. And, you know, maybe go in depth and talk about how it needs to be a local psychologist, it needs to be somebody who understands them, it needs to be... but it's all the same problems, isn't it? I wonder if we weren't Sri Lanka fans, if we weren't from Sri Lanka, if we had to talk about a different side, it'd be the same issues. I know from kind of following and covering a bit of English cricket that they have a lot of the same problems as well, right? Since 2015, when the England men's side hit a low, and then, you know, they've become their white ball teams become one of the best teams in the world. They've addressed some of these problems. They've addressed their fielding. They've addressed playing under pressure. And part of, you know, the biggest part of that, and it's timely to talk about this because Owen Morgan just retired from cricket, was Owen Morgan making them face up to this stuff, right? Because sometimes I feel the culture around Sri Lankan cricket can be often, let's not confront these things. I made a joke earlier about how bad our running between the wickets is. It's been bad since me and you were born, before me and you were even born. in every form of the game, in every gender playing it, she, he, them. Let's actually confront it, because it's like running between the wickets is a great example of something that I really feel could be fixed quite quickly. I don't think it needs to be. I don't want to be sitting here in 30 years' time going, yeah, Sri Lanka's just run badly between the wickets, there's nothing we can do. Because sometimes I feel with, you know, the two areas in particular, running between the wickets and fielding, that we've just conceded we're bad at those. I just don't think we need to be. I think they're both areas of the game where we could be, and we have at points, I've seen Sri Lanka sides be absolutely incredible at both of those two things.
Yeah.
But when those standards slip again, we just accept that the standards are slipped and we're like, that's where we're at. And actually, if we're going to insist that we're at the top table of cricket, if we're going to insist that we're one of the big boys when it comes to cricket, or big girls when it comes to cricket, then we've got to raise our standards and just not accept that is the way it is, right? And we've got to improve those areas of the game, and I think there are areas that can be improved, and we should strive for excellence. Anyway, Estelle, I think that's enough of me, off my soapbox. I'll put that away. Should we leave it there? I'm excited to watch this young Sri Lanka side. And, you know, I think all the negatives we just mentioned, I think the women have done us really proud this tournament. And I think that the buzz of all Sri Lanka fans after that South Africa win was incredible. And I think that they've kind of reminded the world that Sri Lanka does have a women's side, and that they have come to play, not just to make up the numbers, and that they will be back.
They did make the tournament also more interesting, right? I feel like that group, it was essentially going to be between the top. Well, Australia was going to go through, and it was going to be a fight between New Zealand and South Africa, which it's come round to that. But their win against South Africa kind of brought the tournament
disrupted it.
Yeah. Because things didn't go to plan for New Zealand or South Africa. I want to end this with a line from Athapattu, which I think is important because it's good to see that kind of perspective from a senior player after a performance like that. Yesterday at the press con, so she says when she was asked about, you know, young players and, you know, what's the feeling like in the camp. So she said after this kind of game, the players are feeling down. I'm paraphrasing. After this kind of game, the players are feeling down because a lot of the youngsters think we lost the game and we lost the chance to go into the semifinals. But as a senior player and captain, I always defend them and encourage them. This is not the end of the world. The sun is coming up tomorrow again. So I think it's a great perspective to have. Hopefully, Sri Lanka don't mess it up like they did after the 2013 World Cup. This has been a positive tournament for them. Something that they can use as, I think, a springboard to really get better in the next 12 months, 24 months. So fingers crossed that happens.
Let's leave it there. Thanks for listening and following. You can follow Estelle on Twitter at Estelle_Vazu1, as in the number one. You can follow me. I'm at Mark Machado. Follow Estelle for great insights and lots of really interesting bits about Sri Lankan cricket. You can follow me just for the vibes, basically. You can also follow this actual podcast on Twitter as well, at SL9994DM. You can follow the whole network at 9994DM as well. They're on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. I think Jared's got us on Tinder and Hinge and Bumble and all sorts as well. All sorts of various different dating apps. And that's fine. And of course, you can watch the whole show on YouTube, which is great. And wherever you're listening or watching, leave us your comments because we'd love to hear from you as well. Tell all your friends and family about us. Thanks for listening. Bye. Thank you for listening to Sri Lanka on 99.94, where we speak cricket every day. Please rate, review and subscribe wherever you enjoy your podcast and tell all your friends and family about us. You can download the 99.94 app and follow us on Twitter. I'm at Mark Machado and Estelle is at Estelle_Vazudev1, as in the number one. Never miss out. Join our 24/7 conversation on social media and follow us at 9994DM. Cricket every day, your way.
Get ready, race fans, because the ultimate NASCAR experience is about to hit the airwaves. Welcome to Pit Pass NASCAR, the podcast that takes you deep into the heart-pounding world of NASCAR racing.
Join us each week as we bring you closer to the NASCAR action with exclusive interviews and all the news and rumors you need with your favorite drivers, team members, and industry insiders.
So whether you're a fan of super speedways, short ovals, or road racing, or you've just watched Talladega Nights, Pit Pass NASCAR is the podcast you've been waiting for.
Get ready to fuel your passion for NASCAR like never before. Subscribe now to Pit Pass NASCAR on your favorite podcast platform or head to evergreenpodcast.com and get ready to join us.
Launching in the fall on Evergreen Podcast Network. Follow us on social media at pitpass_NASCAR to stay up to date with everything you need to know about the podcast.